You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I am your host, Otto Dagnolo, and this evening, my guest is actor, director, minister, Steve Shermett. And now I don't know what it is with these Arizona actors, but like last week's guest, Mark Spino, Steve is versed in martial arts, firearms, and is a certified scuba diver. So I'll try to find out if he's a bit of an adrenaline junkie too, like Mark. You know, you never know. At any rate, Steve will be with us right after this first cut called Becoming Human from the Fervor Records catalog, written and performed by Super Stereo here in the Auto D Show. Check it out.
Your heart, and find it shiny clean. We never knew from the start what it means to end. We need to find what life was like and bring it back again.
And that was Becoming Human from Super Stereo here in the Auto D Show, which is brought to you tonight by the third annual Fervor Music Biz Summit, which is happening April 4th in the main auditorium of the Glendale Library. For more information, go to fervormusicbizsummit.com. It's free to attend, but you have to register first. And you'll get a chance to meet music supervisors from Los Angeles and hear panel discussions relating to getting your music into TV shows and films. The last 2 years have been great, and this year should be even better. I'll be there. I'll be moderating a panel, and I'll also be interviewing one of the guests during the event. So come on out and say hello. And, you know, if you're a music creator or a rights owner or a music publisher, you really don't want to miss this event. So register today at fervormusicbizsummit.com. Tonight's show is also brought to you by therecordingartist.com, your interactive music production entertainment experience launching in May. So be sure to check them out at therecordingartist.com. And now, without further ado, let me welcome to the show this evening's guest, filmmaker and actor Steve Shermett. And welcome to the show, and thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
The fact that we're doing this from Tucson, I'm assuming that that's your home.
Yeah, I've been here for, man, the better part of 30 years.
I was wondering if you were an Arizona native.
Oh, not quite, but 30 years, I guess, is pretty close.
Where are you originally from?
Waterbury, Connecticut, and I lived in Southern California, Southern Florida, and Illinois, in Chicago, where I went to college.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to the famous Moody Bible Institute.
I was originally from Peoria, and my daughter went to DePaul.
Oh, yeah, I know Peoria. I've been there a few times.
So when did you come to Arizona?
I came around 1989, and been here ever since. We're planning on moving up to the mountains in a few months, but
really?
A few weeks maybe, yeah.
Moving out of Tucson?
Yep, heading up to the cooler climes.
Wow.
Well, you know, people vacation places they enjoy, so one of the places people in the desert go to in Arizona is the White Mountains, and when we started vacationing up there, we're like, this is beautiful. We should live up here someday. Well, the kids are grown. They're out of the house. We both have career changes, so now's the time.
Okay, that sounds exciting. You've been doing a lot of work. Are you going to continue to act from up there?
Yeah, absolutely. If anything, I'm hoping to turn up the heat even more on that and get some more stuff going.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about what got you into acting in the first place.
Well, I fell in love with acting in like middle school. And when I got into high school, there was an amazing drama program. And I got involved in that. I became the president of the drama club. I got involved in community theater and the Civic Light Opera and did that for a while. And then I stepped away from it, raised a family, went to school. And about 5 years ago, I got introduced to screen acting and I fell in love.
A little different than stage, huh?
It is. It's different in many ways, and it was just the thing for me. You know, it was a great fit, and I'm passionate about it, so I went in it, you know, jumped in with both feet.
What kind of background did you have in training for acting?
Well, the drama department we had in high school was simply phenomenal. We got an amazing acting teacher there, and that was a few years, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of stage work. And then when I left there, I ended up becoming a pastor. It's not acting, but you're speaking in front of people, you know, several times a week, and you have to keep an audience engaged, you know? And then I ended up hosting some television programs, again, not acting, but getting in front of camera, still trying to engage with people, and end up taking some classes at Pima Community College for acting and the Chuck Williams Master Acting class here in Tucson. After I had been into acting for a few years. And I take online classes, I read books, and I practice every day almost on an online platform called We Audition.
Oh, cool.
Actors get together and they read for one another for auditions.
I'm unfamiliar with this site.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. I would definitely encourage your listeners, anybody involved in the industry, to check it out. Castings happen on this site. Auditions happen on this site for self-tape readers, and people simply get on to rehearse. And I work on that site several times a day, usually, and I, knock on wood, become one of the top-rated readers and coaches on that site.
And the site, again, was called We Audition?
WeAudition.com, absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to make a note of that myself and check it out.
Yeah, and when you don't live in Hollywood or Los Angeles, you know, or New York, and you want to audition for some of these roles, nowadays, with technology, all you have to do is send in what's called a self-tape. So you audition on videotape, send it in, they get to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's auditioning without the traveling. It's pretty cool.
And I wanted to ask you something, too, about your background before. You mentioned the community theater growing up. And in your bio, it says that you were also in the Civic Light Opera. So did you do some singing?
I did some singing, yeah. It's a misleading terminology if you're not from the area.
Okay.
The Civic Light Opera is a group of musical theater. So it's not opera per se, but it is musical theater. And the San Bernardino Civic Light Opera, when I was in high school, I actually got cast in the program Grease.
As which character?
I was in the background. I was one of the chorus singers, you know, one of the high school students that just sang in the big numbers. And in the community theater, I did, you know, classics such as Man of La Mancha, Guys and Dolls, that sort of thing.
And have you done any singing outside of the stage at all? Have you ever been into the music end of the business?
No, I am. I've sung in some church choirs and some community choirs, but nothing really serious since I was in community theater. Okay. Still have a love for it and always think maybe someday I'll go back to it. But it's a lot of work, and right now my passion's in filmmaking.
I hear you. Well, listen, you mentioned you stopped the business for a while and to raise a family and then got back into it about 5 years ago. Tell me about the family.
My wife and I got married in 1988, so we're like 31 years married now.
Mm-hmm.
We raised four children, three boys and a girl.
That's some work.
And the youngest now is a little past halfway through college, and he's in another city. All the children are out of the house and into their own lives and careers. Three of the four are married. And my wife just became a nurse practitioner.
Okay.
I had been a pastor for over 30 years, and I retired from that. And I'm going to live the retired life as an actor, live the acting life.
Well, as a pastor, you did a lot of television as well.
I did, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. You did a number of episodes. I was watching kind of some stuff earlier today.
Yeah, I had three or four programs. I did one called Rock, Shovels, and Manuscripts for about four seasons. It's archaeology and the Bible and where they intersect. So kind of educational, and mm-hmm. I enjoyed it tremendously. Took several trips to Israel and a trip to Turkey, and used a lot of my research from those locations. And had another program called The Shepherd's Heart, several seasons of that I hosted. It's a panel discussion with pastors and ministers and lay ministers, biblical topics and how they intersect with today's issues.
Mm-hmm. Any of the kids interested in the filming business?
Nope, not a one of them. Heck, just getting them to watch something I'm in is difficult.
Oh, yes, especially what you're in. That's even less relevant, you know. It's just dad.
Yep, pretty much.
Now, you've also, on your bio, mentions that you're credited as a casting director as well. Have you done a lot of that?
I've done casting and producing. I wouldn't say I've done a lot of it. I've got three or four credits for casting, feature films and industrials and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I keep working at it, here a little, there a little. It's not my passion, but I do enjoy doing it.
I think it's one of the trickiest things to really nail. And when it's done right, man, you can just tell when you're watching a show. It's like, man, that person was born to play that role.
Absolutely. Casting directors should be getting Oscars, in my opinion, for the work that they do.
Yeah, I agree. They should get a lot more credit at any rate. But I think maybe in an independent market, it's tougher because maybe you don't have quite the quantity to choose from.
I think the biggest drawback isn't so much whether the film's independent or not. It's the budget of the film. If you have a big enough budget, you can get a big enough draw.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a bit tricky when you have a small budget, but there is a lot of talent in Arizona. If all things work well, I'll be casting a modern-day Western in the very near future. And we just finished wrapping on the Righteous 12.
I read about
helped
that.
Helped produce, yeah.
So you were a producer on the Righteous 12?
Yes, a producer on the Righteous 12 and one of the main actors.
Okay.
And, I mean, we just wrapped like a couple days ago. We worked so hard. We filmed that thing for about a month, 12, 14-hour days.
Wow.
Horse riding, gunfights, bar fights, a classical Western with a redemptive twist. It's going to be pretty cool, I think.
Is this your first Western or have you done a number?
No, this is the first one. And man, I love it. I've got a couple more on the horizon. I'm cast in Of Myth and Legend. You can check that out on IMDb. And that should be filming hopefully this year.
And that was called Myth and Legends?
Of Myth and Legend.
Oh, Of Myth and Legend. Okay.
Yeah.
And Legend. I'm just jotting this down as we go here.
No, that's cool. And the other one I can't mention by name yet. It's a modern-day Western, and hopefully I'll be posting about it on Facebook this week, but we shall see.
Cool. And you can't talk about it because it's just not on paper yet? You haven't signed the deal?
Exactly.
Okay. It's not very many people that when I invite to be on the show, they want to wait till the day before to confirm because they're busy. I love how busy you are and how ready you are to take the call.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You were flexible with me, you know. I told you I was filming. You said, hey, we can confirm the day before, and if something comes up, we can reschedule, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. And I was going to say, we didn't get to talk much about The Righteous 12. I want to talk a little bit more about that. What's the basic concept of the movie?
The Righteous 12 is about a gang of cowboys. So it's filmed in the 1880s, like right before the movie Tombstone is set in history. This is a fiction set around that time. And these 12 gangsters go on a journey where they all turn into good guys as they head to Tombstone to avenge the death of one of their brothers.
Okay.
And by the time the film is ended, these 12 gangsters become good men.
Okay, interesting. Now, you had to ride horses in the movie, right?
Yeah, I did a lot of horseback riding. I went from a full-blown... Well, I wouldn't say a total novice. I've been on horses, but I definitely wasn't familiar or comfortable with them. And we did so much riding on this that I actually got compliments by a real working cowboy.
How does that feel now you're done and you're like, wow, I actually learned something and I feel comfortable I can do that again?
Oh, it feels great. In fact, shortly after that, I was talking to another casting director who's casting another Western, and she said, hey, what are your skills on a horse? And then I auditioned for another Western, same thing. They wanted to know, hey, what are your skills on a horse? So maybe I've got more Westerns in my future. I sure hope so.
That's pretty cool. Well, this is a great place for them. I mean, you got so many locations to shoot out here that look great, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. The movie we're making is going to have some eye candy. I think people all over the world are gonna love it just because of the scenery.
So now, when do you think The Righteous 12 is going to be wrapped up?
It'll probably be in theaters in October, maybe November. As things sit right now, we've still got some distribution deals in the works, possibly. But the way it sits right now, if nothing else changes, it'd probably be in 150 to 200 theaters. Then it would move to streaming platforms and DVD.
Okay.
If it gets picked up by a studio, then it might be in a lot more theaters.
Now, as a feature, is this your first role as producer?
No, my first role as producer in a feature was the film Amazed by You, which is available on Amazon Prime and several other streaming platforms, Google Play and those kind of platforms.
And when was that movie done?
That was only about 2 years ago.
This is the second feature you've produced?
Yes.
And the first Western you've produced. What got you into this film?
Into producing?
No, well, into what made you get involved with The Righteous 12? I mean, was it someone else's film that hired you, or was this, did the script come to you, or how did you get involved with that film?
The filmmaker who made Amazed by You, he brought me in as an actor, and then he brought me in as a producer. He liked my work so much, he offered me one of the roles in his next film, which is The Righteous 12. This is with Avondale Pictures and Chuck Williams.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I agreed to be a producer. I agreed to take on the role. And that's how the industry is. You know, you work with people, they like your work, and they give you more work.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? And a lot of times people go, they don't like it because the business is a buddy-buddy business. And I'm kind of like, well, when you work with someone you like and trust, why are you going to try somebody new? You know, you call the people you know and trust. That's kind of how it works.
Exactly. Yeah. There's so much on the line. It's so difficult to make a movie, and the risks are so high.
Yeah. That's the
truth.
They're
absolutely going to go with a known quantity whenever possible.
Yeah. Well, how about comedy? Have you done any comedy?
No. There's a comedic element to my role in Amazed by You.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be some good dry humor in The Righteous 12, but it's definitely a dramatic piece. Actually, I like comedy. I think I'll do well with it because I've done some monologues and that sort of thing with comedy. But I'm waiting for that door to open up.
Right. Have you done any straight-up comedy? Have you done any improv?
I've trained in improv. Okay. And then we had at the Unscrewed Theater in Tucson, Arizona, I went through their course, several weeks of improv, and then we had a showcase at the end. I did pretty well. I enjoyed it. I enjoy comedy, but not nearly as much, at least not yet, as I do the drama.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to find out if we can get you in a comedic Western at some point and see what happens.
Oh, yeah, right? A remake of the Frisco Kid or something.
Something, yeah. Have you done any writing?
I did. I produced a micro series called The Interview, which is available on YouTube. anybody wants it, they can reach out to me and I'll give them a link to it. Three micro episodes, kind of as a proof of concept mm-hmm. for these short little series that you could put on social media. They turned out pretty well. I liked what we ended up doing.
It was called The Interview?
It's called The Interview.
So mm-hmm. what's the concept behind that?
It's cops in Tucson wrestling with stereotypes, and there's a twist in each of the episodes to break down stereotypes and prejudices.
Okay.
So, for example, I guess I can give you a mini spoiler. The interview is about a gangster all tatted up and tough looking who's being drilled by the cops in an interview for a crime that was committed, and they're confident he did it because of the way he looks.
Mm-hmm.
But then something interesting happens, and I'll leave it at that.
That's good enough. I mean, at least I kind of get a basic concept, so that kind of helps me out a little bit.
Yeah. And all three episodes are like 10 minutes, so they're mm-hmm. like 3 minutes each.
It seems to me there's more opportunity for short content now as well.
Absolutely, because social media is just wide open. You can make whatever you want, put it out there, and the world can see it if they choose to do so.
Mm-hmm. Even watching episodic television these days, some episodes would be 22 minutes and the next one's 37 minutes. I mean, they're not even as concerned about that old 30-minute, 60-minute break, you know?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm in this amazing, record-breaking, award-winning series called The Chosen, which I want everybody to check out. And it's, you know, full production value, amazing television, mm-hmm. and it follows that same pattern. They just write the episode the way they feel to write it, and each episode is different in length from the next.
That's got to be so much more free as a director, instead of being told, no, you need to take 30 minutes out, or you need to put 7 minutes in. When you tell the story and you're done, that's really where it should be.
Exactly. Yep.
And have you done much directing?
No, I directed The Interview. At least I shared in directing The Interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I help with the programs that I produce, you know, the Amazed by You and The Righteous 12. They have directors and good directors, but you can ask them. I sit there and I whisper over their shoulder and I point things out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I will add some story and say, hey, don't you think this would be cool? And they'd be like, yeah, let's add that. And I'm like, hey, look at this thing happening over here. Watch out for that. Maybe we should do it this way.
Sure.
And they all listen, and sometimes they actually do it.
Yeah. In the series The Chosen, give me a little bit of an idea of what your role is.
The Chosen is a storyline about the life of Christ from the perspective of those who met him.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't follow the Bible story, but it intersects with the Bible story.
Mm-hmm.
And I play a Pharisee. Pharisees are the stereotypical bad guys that were the enemies of Jesus. They didn't believe in him. They were jealous of him, and they wanted to see him stopped.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more going on than what the stereotypical story gives us. You see some of these Pharisees, they don't come off as bad guys. They're examining, they're struggling. They're wondering if this is really true, if it's not true. Is he a huckster taking advantage of people? Or is he the real deal? And I get to interact with the main characters in episodes 4 and 8. In episode 4, we're discussing John the Baptist. Is he legit? And then in episode, you gotta go ahead.
I was gonna say, can you imagine? I mean, I can't. You can. You're actually in a show where they have imagined it and they've written the dialogue and they're playing it out. But to me, it's just fascinating to even imagine.
It's doing quite well. Millions and millions of people have already seen it, and they released their own app just a couple months ago, and we're somewhere around 8 million views on it.
Awesome.
Yeah, the lead who plays Jesus won a Movie Guide Award just a few days ago.
Cool.
And people are talking about it. It's good stuff. It's good television. So even for the audience that may not have a religious bent, it's just good TV. It's worth watching. You know, it's enjoyable.
Right. And then let me know, is that available on video on demand?
The main way that people are watching it is through their app, which is free. You can download it and then cast it to your TV.
I see.
But you can also watch it on the streaming platform PureFlix, the streaming platform VidAngel, and I think it just came out or is about to come out on the Hallmark Channel.
Okay, that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Man, there are so many places to find content and so many ways to go as a content owner. You know, when you talked about this project where you still had distribution up in the air, what are some of the things that you get the most concerned about when it comes to distribution?
Well, I don't usually handle that end of things. As a producer, I have the things that I handle, and that's not one of them.
Oh, okay.
But I think that my biggest concern is there's just a glut of content out there. And because of that, Netflix, Amazon Prime, and all these streaming platforms, they just don't have to pay you much because they can just get anything and everything. And if you turn on your TV tonight, you literally can watch one of 100,000 things, maybe a million things.
Yeah.
So even something as amazing as The Chosen, it gets lost in the shuffle. How do you get word out that this thing that's like rated like a 9.8 or 9.9 on IMDb, and yet still most of the country doesn't know about it?
Isn't that amazing? We have such a fractured viewership. I mean, when you go back to the three network, you know, concept when we were kids coming up, and the Beatles captured, I think, 70 million people watching a show. That can't happen today.
Right. Exactly. There's just way too much out there. And, you know, Disney has recently jumped in, and Apple is jumping in, and Netflix is dominating, and the world has gone crazy.
Yeah, it really has. And when, you know, when the music industry went digital and iTunes popped up, all the record companies kind of, they kind of threw their arms up in the air and said, well, I guess we don't know what to do. Let's just put all of our music on iTunes. And in a sense, destroyed their brand awareness, because then all of a sudden to the fans, every band was on iTunes. There were no more record companies, kind of. And I thought, had they just put the singles on iTunes and then started their own streaming services, you might have come back to them for the rest of the product. I see now every network, smart enough, they're doing that. Even though Netflix is where they put the first season, they're starting their own streaming services, and you're going to have to go there to get the product in the long run.
Yeah, and that's problematic too, though. You know, there was a time, and still is, you know, you subscribe to a cable channel and you pay $120 a month or whatever, and you get all that. But now it's chunked into little pieces, and you got to buy this one, you got to buy this one, you got to buy this one, you got to buy this one. And it's like, I can't afford to, or I don't want to buy yet another one.
And, you know, we have this real like negative attitude about, I'm not paying $2.99 for that because I can wait 2 months and get it for free. But I'll go spend $60 on dinner with you, honey, if you want. You know,
I know. Isn't that crazy?
It is. It's like that $2 or $3 seems so unfair when it's going to be free in a couple months or not. So it's an odd price point to have such an issue with.
Yep, it is.
And then that does make it really tough for that money to trickle back to creators, because it's not a lot of income.
No, it's not. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but I'll give you an example. If I have, as a filmmaker, put something on Amazon or Netflix, you watch it for an hour, I might get 20 cents or 10 cents. I mean, it's nothing.
Yeah.
And so if 100,000 people watch it, assuming they find it in those millions of films, I haven't even made, you know, a day's worth of filming back.
I know.
You know, if I got a decent budget film, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally do. Besides the cost of financing your crew and your cast, let's say you actually license music, and now a few pennies of those pennies go right back out to the music publishers. So, I mean,
yeah,
it takes another huge cut out of what you're trying to do.
So the big studios still control everything. They've got the money, they've got the resources, but independents, films are getting recognized, and they can break in through social media and through other streaming platforms, but it's extremely, extremely challenging.
I'm forgetting the name of the app I heard of recently. It starts with a Q, like Quibi or something like that. And it's for shorts, strictly for short content.
It's a great idea. I haven't visited it, but I've also heard of it.
Yeah, because I think that people have been making, you know, short films for a long time. Partly, a lot of times, to practice, it's a little easier than trying to take a feature right out of the gate. But everyone always said you can't do anything with them. There's no place to go with shorts. And a lot of directors would argue they were a waste of time. But now it looks like they're not. I think that viewers tend to binge watch whatever they're watching. So if it's 20 minutes long, they might watch five. If it's an hour long, they might watch one and a half. If it's 5 minutes long, they might watch 10. They'll just watch till they want to stop anyway. So the
and filmmakers want to, they definitely want to see their stuff watched. But then the question comes up again, are they getting their bang for their buck? Are they getting paid to you know, inspire them to make more, to enable them to make more? We'll see.
Well, I'm going to get back, if you don't mind, I'd like to get back to your move to the White Mountains.
Okay.
Because I'm seeing, I mean, you, from what I see, you're kind of busy out of Tucson. And so do you see most of your work once you get up there traveling and leaving home?
Well, I do have a lot of connections in Tucson and Phoenix, and I don't imagine myself dropping those connections. Mm-hmm. But in moving up to the White Mountains, I'll be getting closer to Albuquerque. Albuquerque is become a major filming and television production area. So I'm going to start taking trips down to Albuquerque and trying to get into, you know, some of the movies and TV shows they're filming over there.
So that's kind of cool. You're kind of moving to more of a halfway point, because from Phoenix or Tucson, that's a hike.
Exactly. It's about 7-hour drive from Tucson to Albuquerque, but it's only 4 from the White Mountains. It's a traveling business, you know. I got a call from my agent one day. Hey, you've booked this role. Can you get to Tuba City tomorrow? Well, that's a 6-hour drive. And I'm like, yeah, just let me pack. I'm going.
Uh-huh.
And then The Chosen, that film's in Texas. So actors are, this is just what we do. If we're serious about this industry, we'll hop on a plane the next day. Yeah. We're happy to do so. Yeah.
Now, on The Chosen, you mentioned you were in 2 episodes. Is that the limit of your recurring character, or are you going to be in a few more?
Season 1 is done.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the 8 episodes, I'm in 2. Season 2 is not yet written. So I don't yet know if I'll be recurring in season 2. The hope is that they'll produce 8 seasons. Wow. Or 7 seasons. Yeah. So if that happens, maybe I'll recur more often. The only thing I know is my character was in a certain town,
mm-hmm.
and the storyline, as it closed the end of the season, the disciples are traveling away from that town. So unless they have flashbacks to stories happening in that town, or they come back to that town, or I travel, you know.
Right. Well, that's interesting too. So in the Chosen, you're playing a real character that they've proved lived then?
I'm not playing a real character, no.
Okay, so you're playing a fabricated character, essentially.
Correct, yep.
An amalgamation of what might have been.
Exactly, and that's how a lot of the story is. Like, the Bible mentions Pharisees and scribes.
Right.
But not a lot of attention is given to an individual Pharisee. But in this story, there's a lot of attention given to the Pharisees. Yeah. It's a neat production. And we got, just to spread word, just a couple of weeks ago, we ended up with another feature film on Netflix that I haven't been able to mention to you yet. You okay with me switching gears like that?
Oh, absolutely. And this is something you can mention now, or is this another thing we can't talk about?
No, this is something we can talk about. Okay. This film is out.
Okay.
And it was filmed mostly in the Tucson area and southern Arizona, and it's called Fronteras. And Fronteras is, for an independent, low-budget film, big distribution picked it up. So it ended up being for sale at Walmart, Best Buy, Target. It was on all the major streaming platforms, cable and Dish, mm-hmm. and now it's on Netflix.
Okay, and are you acting in this one as well?
Yes, I have a supporting role in this, and I helped cast this film, so I was one of the casting directors as well.
Oh, cool.
Yep, and it's called Fronteras. This is about Border Patrol here in the Tucson area. A very dangerous drug is making its way across the border, so the government sends a task force to partner with the Border Patrol to stop it. This task force is shady,
mm-hmm.
and one of the Border Patrol agents who's local is of Hispanic background. You think this task force might be racist, and there's a conflict with this moral Border Patrol agent working with this possibly crooked, racist task force from the government.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, it's a good storyline, a lot of action, a lot of drama, extremely well done by some of the actors. It's an enjoyable film. I'd highly recommend it for something that's made in this area with the budget they had. It's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And who do you recall the director on that project?
Oh, yeah, the director is Andrew Dean. This is his first feature outside of film school.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, he did great. And it was a film by Diego Cacho. So Andrew Dean and Diego Cacho are the two main guys on this film.
Okay, great. Listen, you talk about hopping around. I want to hop around, too. I want to go back to The Righteous 12 for a second.
Okay, cool.
Just wanted to ask you, you know, being a Western and all, there's a lot of guys in town that do this. What are some of the other local actors that were in that film with you?
I'm going to open up the IMDb website instead of just using memory.
Okay.
The main bad guy of the film is a guy named Michael Ochoa-Torina. Michael's starred in a few films and television programs, and he's becoming pretty well known. And he plays the role of Phoenix Hawk. Wade Everett, who's also in Fronteras, this is our third feature together,
mm-hmm.
plays one of the Righteous 12. One of the cool things we did is we've got a female as one of the 12.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Tony Ekstad, a local theater actor as one of the 12. He also does some film work.
Cool.
But I don't think we've got, you know, like if I mention the name, you say, oh, yeah, I know that person.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A lot of these people are pretty new to film work.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to check out Fronteras as well, because being, you know, the first feature for a director out of film school, that's got to be exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I think you'll be quite impressed with the quality of this project for such a young man.
Mm-hmm. And listen, something else I'd wanted to ask you, Steve, when it gets to, you know, your acting on set, do you have a particular school of thought that you approach it from in terms of training? Like, are you a method actor, or have you done any Meisner studying, or what's your approach?
Yeah, people are going to hate me for this, but I'm not that kind of guy.
Okay.
I'm more simple than that. My character has a moment where he's mean, so I be mean.
Uh-huh.
My character has a moment where he's happy, so I be happy.
Okay.
My character has a moment where he's funny.
You're from the Russell Crowe school of acting. Russell says, anyone can act. You just say the words and do the part. So I was like, okay.
Yeah. I really haven't analyzed my approach more than that.
Uh-huh.
The training I got when I was younger didn't have a name to it. But what I try to do is, okay, all of us have been angry.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've got a role where I'm angry, then I just recall what it's like to be angry.
Sure.
And I act that way, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been in love. We've all been happy. We've all been bored. So we just, you know, reflect those things on screen. Easier said than done, I'm aware.
Right. But have you been on set where you've dealt with actors who needed their space for their process, and when maybe you don't need that space?
Yes. And I've also dealt with actors who wanted to bring me into their method,
mm-hmm.
which I found, I don't know, awkward.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to respect and honor their work, too, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, sometimes some actors, you know, they want to stay away, and they don't even want to talk to people till they're in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Other actors are like, just, you know, they're laughing and joking, and then they leave their trailer or wherever they are, and they get in front of the camera and they play the mean bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can
get to go.
Turn it on and turn it off, huh?
Exactly, yeah.
Cool.
And,
well, listen, what have you got coming up that's exciting?
Well, I've got a few more films that are in the works right now. Of Myth and Legend, hopefully we'll be filming this year.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that.
I've got a feature, it's a thriller/horror called Ominous that's filming, and we're hoping to finish that one up this year.
Okay, and are you a producer in that one as well?
No, in that one I just act. I'm a bad guy. I'm like a I don't want to say mad scientist, because that comes off as like a weird... I lead a religious cult that's science-based. How's that?
There you go. Do you prefer the bad guys? Do you think that's more interesting, or is there not a preference for you?
I like playing tough guys, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't yet decided if I'd like to be in the good guys or the bad guys. I don't know if I'll ever make that distinction.
As long as they're upset and they've got a purpose, you're good.
Yeah, I like dramatic roles. I like roles that make me be serious. In real life, I joke around. I'm fun. I enjoy people. I laugh a lot. So when I get a serious role, I get to be somebody I'm not usually.
I get that.
Yeah, so I find that pretty cool.
Awesome. Well, listen, if people want to find you or check out your work, what's the easiest place to hunt you down? Facebook, or what's your website?
Yeah, Facebook is great. I love people to follow me on Facebook. I have my own website, stevesheremet.com.
And let's spell your last name for them.
Sure, it's SHEREMETT, stevesheremet.com. And you can find me on IMDb with that same name, Internet Movie Database, where all the good stuff, all the film production information is. It's the number one spot people go. And, of course, Instagram. But I'm more active on Facebook than Instagram in interacting with people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how do you find social media for your career? Do you find it's imperative you use it? Is it a big deal?
Totally invaluable. Yeah, if it wasn't for social media, I don't think I'd be a film actor today.
Really?
Yep. Almost every gig I've booked has been through networking, and most of the networking has been done through social media.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a dramatic look, too. I think that when you see a picture of Steve Chermette, you remember that face, and that's a good thing.
Well, thank you. It does help. It's your picture that gets you in the door, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And listen, at the top of the hour, I mentioned that you were versed in martial arts and firearms and a certified scuba diver. Where does this come into your life? Where did you start martial arts, and what form of martial arts were you doing?
I started martial arts probably about 30 years ago. Like most guys, it's always been intriguing and fascinating. You watch the old martial arts movies and they're real cool. But I was just looking for a hobby and a way to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, hey, why don't I do martial arts? It would be a way of exercise. And then I could fulfill that childhood fantasy, you know, right up there with astronaut and learn some martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell in love with it. And I ended up doing jiu-jitsu. And I progressed to the point where I ended up becoming an instructor, a first degree black belt. And then I became a second degree black belt. So I did it for many years. And then, you know, life got busy. I got sore and old, and I stepped away from it.
Oh, man, I know. I play tennis, and then I can't play for a few days. Like, oh, my back hurts.
Yeah, so I don't do martial arts anymore.
How about scuba diving? And, what's your background in the water?
Yeah, I always loved the ocean. I've lived in Florida. I've lived in Southern California. And as a kid, I just spent as much time at the beach as I could. So I love the waves, love the surf, love the ocean. But a few years ago, again, wanted another hobby and thought, what the heck? I'll give this one a try. Even though we don't have an ocean here in Arizona, I travel a lot, or at least I used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go to Florida, California, overseas. And I thought, what the heck? I'll become a scuba diver. So I took training up in Phoenix and went to Lake Pleasant to get my certification.
Mm-hmm.
And then ended up diving in Mexico and in Florida and in California.
Cool.
You know, I just love the ocean. I just can't. I'm just as comfortable in the ocean as I am on land. It's crazy. I love it.
You know, I went skydiving a couple times, and people say, I've heard people say it's kind of like scuba diving. And I thought, you know, I get that. Halfway down, when you're not speeding up anymore, you just kind of float, kind of like you do in the water. And that's kind of a neat feeling in the water when you're not swimming, when you're scuba diving, and you're just kind of sitting there.
Yeah, it is. I prefer it. I find a nice piece of coral reef or a cool school of fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, get my buoyancy control right, and I just hang out with them for as long as I can. I think it's way cool.
That's
leisurely fin to the next spot.
Have you done any photography underwater?
I'd love to, but no, I haven't invested in a decent camera for underwater photography. I mean, I've taken snapshots with waterproof cameras, but nothing like I would really like to do.
Well, one day we'll have to get you in a film where you're acting underwater.
Oh, you know it, man. I would love that. Oh, I had an opportunity to do a film in Hawaii. It all fell apart, but it would have been like the dream gig.
Oh, really? What was the film?
I don't remember the name of it, but it was about a missionaries bringing Christianity to the Hawaiians in the, I don't know, 1700s, 1800s or whatever it was.
Right, right.
And there was like 10,000 submissions for the role I submitted for. And they reached out to me and said, congratulations, you're one of the few we want to look at. Can you be in L.A. in 3 days or whatever? And I was like, yeah. So I hopped in my car and I started driving to L.A. on that day. And I said, you know what? I'm happy to come to L.A., but can I send in a self-tape? And they're like, yeah, you can send in a self-tape. Great, thanks. So I turned around and I went home, and then I never heard from them again. And I kept reaching out to them. What the heck? What's going on? What's going on? They said, oh, we're so sorry. You know, we had 10,000 people. We lost you in the shuffle. My bad. Yeah, I could have killed somebody.
Was that a measure of were they trying to tell you that you disrespected them, do you think?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
They were just overwhelmed, and they had, you know.
They really just dropped the ball.
Yeah, they just dropped the ball, exactly.
That's too bad.
And yeah, to my detriment, because that would have been like a dream role.
Yeah, it would have been fun.
Well, yeah.
Actually, we're coming up on the end of the hour here, Steve. I appreciate you taking the time with me tonight, and I apologize for our little technical difficulties in the beginning.
Oh, no worries, man. Thanks for bearing with me and bringing me on.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we had an opportunity to do this before you leave town.
My pleasure. Maybe we'll do it again someday. Yeah. Appreciate it much.
All right, Steve. Safe travels.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.